Hello, everyone, and a very pleasant good afternoon to you, wherever you may be. Bruce Ash and guest host Tom Danahy welcoming you to a special Frank Abagnale 71st birthday edition of Inside Track. Tom, ready for a good show?
Absolutely.
I am too. So let's do this. I think before we get started, we have John Holden, who is holding on the line. John is doing a ward-only ballot proposition signature drive. John, can you get John Holden on the line? Oh, John, you right there?
I am here, I hope.
All right. Hey, John, real quick, because we got a loaded show here today. Tell our listeners about the effort to get ward-only voting in Tucson.
Okay, well, for Tom's benefit, this is not nuclear science, but what we're doing is trying to collect signatures right now to put the ward-only initiative on the ballot. Ward-only would change the way the city elects its council people. Right now, the mayor and council are all voted citywide. What we'd like to do is change it so that after the primaries, where the parties select their candidates, that in the general election, that each council candidate will be elected by people in their own neighborhood, in their ward only, instead of going citywide for their support.
And how's that going?
It's going slowly. It's warm, but like right now we're out in the Enchanted Hills neighborhood, west of Mission, south of 36th Street, going door-to-door with several teams. And if somebody comes knocking on your door, don't sick the dog on us, please.
All right. Hey, John, good luck. Keep at it. This is an important thing for equity here in the city of Tucson. You're a good man. I appreciate your efforts.
Absolutely. Thank you very much, and we'll come knocking.
Hey, John, hang on just one second for Tom.
This is Tom. Lifelong Democrat. We all know that, but I think that the way Tucson elects its city council is reprehensible. I think it's it's undemocratic. It really is. And I've agreed with, Amo, may he rest in peace. We agreed on this forever. I don't understand why the courts even allow it anymore. I just don't. It's not fair. And if that means that more Republicans will be on the city council, well, that doesn't bother me because I don't live in the city anyway, but it's just not fair.
The whole idea is to at least to get some discussions going on and not just rubber stamp everything 7-0.
I agree.
Hey, thanks very much, John. Keep at it and keep up the good work.
All righty. Thank you very much. Right. You both have a great afternoon.
You bet. Hey, my regular co-host, Eb Wilkinson, is attending the NRA convention this weekend. We have a great show for you today. In just a few moments, Senior Trump 2020 National Security Advisor and spokesman Stephen Rogers will join us about the crisis on our border, just 60 miles away from us here in Tucson, Arizona. In the second half hour, we'll chat with Federalist Opinion contributor George Bardmesser, who is begging Hillary Clinton to jump into the 2020 presidential race. First, as always, thank you very much for supporting our great Inside Track partners, Tucson Iron and Metal Surplus, Imus Wilkinson Asset Management, and Corazon Cabinets. Friends, these are great local businesses you should be doing business with. Well, let's get to it. Before we go any further, let me make a very special welcome to our guest, Stephen Rogers. Stephen Rogers served in the U.S. Air Force from 70 to 74. He was a sergeant there before his honorable discharge. After leaving the Air Force, he went and served on East Orange and Nutley, New Jersey police departments, and later enlisted in the U.S. Naval Reserve, studying at the Naval War College. He was recalled to active duty after 9/11 and was assigned to serve as a senior naval intelligence officer with the U.S. Navy. Rogers retired from the Navy in 2004 as a lieutenant commander and returned to the Nutley Police Force. He retired from the department in 2011 as a detective lieutenant and is currently an advisor to the president and surrogate and spokesman for the 2020 reelect. Mr. Rogers, you are fearless. I've seen you on TV. You give the left fits. I appreciate your courage and style. You're a trusted Trump advisor. Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, yeah. And you're here with Lefty Tom Danahy. He, as you heard, maybe if you were on hold, he does go the right way on a few things, but he'll probably give you the
Dickens. Not on Trump.
He'll give you the Dickens here. Okay. So, Stephen, President Trump has given the Democrats every opportunity to reform DACA, to update our immigration system, to deal with perhaps the most severe North American humanitarian crisis in decades. But Democrats resist and refuse to admit there's even a crisis and resist his efforts. Judges have unconstitutionally attempted to thwart him, and Congress has once again failed us. Do I have this straight, more or less?
Well, you certainly do. And keep in mind that Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi voted before Donald Trump was president to fund $47 million to build a wall. Would you believe that? So here's what's happened. Look, Donald Trump got elected. The Democrat Socialist Party, it's no longer a Democrat Party, it's a Socialist Party. They're engaged in a civil war with each other. They are going to do everything they could to obstruct President Trump from getting his way with the border. They tried with Russian collusion, it collapsed. They've tried with obstruction, and believe me, that is something that is going to be a non-starter as we move forward. So they have nowhere to go. Now, when you look at the economy, you look at our military, you look at the respect he has gained worldwide with world leaders, all of what I'm sharing with you, we have absolutely proof. We have facts, not fake news. You're right on target.
Yeah, so look, you're a former naval intelligence officer. I know you must certainly understand something about terror. When transnational racketeers, human and drug smugglers are using our faulty immigration system to make billions of dollars trafficking in human misery, why is it that the Democrat Socialists don't recognize the threat? But more importantly, what can our country do to stop this awful abuse of human beings and the danger to our country?
Well, let's look at the threat. I sat on the FBI National Joint Terrorism Task Force, and the greatest fear we had when we were analyzing intelligence was that border with Mexico. Why? Because it was porous. There was little or no security. There was no wall. What was left there as any barrier was neglected by both the Democrat, Socialists, and the Republicans back then. So they just simply ignored that. And our greatest fear was not just the drug smugglers and the human traffickers, but what if somebody got the idea, and they still could get the idea, of bringing a smart bomb or some sort of weapon of mass destruction across that border. So the president is very well aware that that could happen, and he's doing everything he can to prevent that. Now, to your question, why are the Democrat Socialists taking the position they are? Their position has always been political. It's never been looking out for the security of the American people. They know that the only thing they can do right now is use this as a basis to obstruct and to hinder the ability of the president to succeed with regard to his promise of securing the border. But it is collapsing. I've got to tell you, I've spoken to conservative Democrats, and they're scratching their heads. And I'll tell you why they're scratching their heads. And you've got this problem right in your state when the customs agents began to transport illegal immigrants crossing that border because the courts ordered and mandated catch and release when they were transported to cities around the country. And in particular, it started with Phoenix. And the people of Phoenix realized that they had to foot the bill, pay your medical, pay for housing, pay for this, pay for that. And in addition to that, see their law enforcement agencies depleted to deal with the problem. They started scratching their heads saying, hey, you know what? It ain't going to work.
So 18,000 illegal immigrants transported to Arizona in January alone.
Not in my backyard. They want everybody else. These Democrat Socialists want everybody else to suffer the consequences of these terrible policies, but they don't want them in their neighborhood. So you know my position has been, and you've heard me say this on the media, transport them to the neighborhoods where these congressional representatives live. And watch how fast they turn their tune.
Tom Danahy?
Hi. First of all, I have to say, in all sincerity, I respect your service to our country, but it just drives me nuts when grown people can't even say the name of the party that they want to talk about.
That's what the Democrats call themselves.
What party do I belong to?
You belong to the Democrat Party.
Is it called the Democrat Party or is it called the Democratic Party?
Well, let's not get hung up on that.
No, I'm being serious. This is important.
Okay.
It's a Democratic Party. Just because Rush Limbaugh wants to call it Democrat Party, that doesn't mean it's right.
Their new leadership is calling it the Democrat Socialist Party.
No, they're not.
Yes, they are.
Not that. First of all, there's nothing wrong with socialism, but I'm not a socialist. I'm a Democrat, okay? And I belong to the Democratic Party. One other thing. You study this whole thing forever. I'm not Tom Clancy, but if I was going to sneak a bomb in, I'd go through Canada, not Mexico. You talk about a porous border. There's no border in the northern part of the United States. Why don't people talk about that?
The problem isn't on the northern border, is it, Steve?
No, he's talking about sneaking in smart bombs. I'm not talking about the problem with immigration's on the southern border. I understand that. And there is a problem with the immigration on the southern border.
Stephen?
Yeah, listen. The problem is on the southern border. The problem is, look, you just don't bring some bomb in, all right, alone. They embed themselves in a lot of these groups. There's no human trafficking to a massive degree on the northern border, as we see south. There's no drug smuggling on a massive grand scale. There's no MS-13 people coming in from Canada. So, you know what? Sometimes the Democrat socialists, what they have to do is kind of think about who they're talking to, and they're talking to experts in national security, in terrorism, and this has nothing to do, believe me. We could put the politics aside. Let's think about the safety of the country. So when the Democrat socialists go off on their tangent, go off on their talking points, they don't know what they're talking about. I see it time and time again when I'm on the air, on TV or radio. They have no clue. So all they do is lean back on their emotional arguments, and at the end of the day, they lose.
Hey, look, we're going to leave it here for right now. We're going to come right back after taking a few messages from our great sponsors. You're listening to Inside Track. It's Bruce Ash, Tom Danahy, and we have Stephen Rogers with the Trump 2020 reelect and a senior advisor. Welcome back to Inside Track. Bruce Ash here with Tom Danahy with our special guest, Stephen Rogers. And Stephen, you're on a news and opinion show all the time, and just yesterday I heard a Democrat spokesman say it was Trump policies which created the asylum crisis, and had the Attorney General not been so harsh on families, we wouldn't have the current crisis. Is this symptomatic of their plan to create an even more chaotic situation, and what's the answer?
Well, look, the problem stems from the policies of the past. Remember, President Trump inherited this. Now, let's talk about what's happened. Before President Trump was elected to office, President Obama did the best he could, all right? I'm not going to be critical of Obama, all right? He did the best he could. He was the one that decided to set up. Remember the story of the cages? Oh, the president's putting kids. Well, nobody was put in cages, all right? They were put in secure areas to make sure that they were taken care of. And that Obama started, okay? But the problem we face is that when President Trump took office and began to take very decisive action that should have been taken years ago by the United States Congress to reform our immigration laws, that's when the Democrat socialists got upset. The problem we face is with the courts. All right. The courts mandated catch and release. The courts are not giving the law enforcement agencies enough time to check out who these people are, where they're from, why are they here. So now we catch them and we release them. So the crisis was given birth to many, many years ago. The president inherited the crisis, and he's doing the best he could to manage the crisis. But even there are many Democrats who are not socialists, who are conservatives, who are now saying, you know what, the president was right. It's now out of control. And we have to bring some control to this problem, and he's doing the best he could, but the Democrat socialists, they don't want to cooperate.
Do you think, Stephen, and Tom, I'll include you in this, do you think that there is a beginning, a turn amongst the Democrats in Congress to maybe look at this as a crisis, if no other reason, a humanitarian crisis, because we simply, there is no way when hundreds of thousands are coming, and these are the ones that turn themselves in at the borders. God only knows how many others are coming in more remote places. But is there a turn that we're seeing at this time, Steve, and then Tom?
Yeah, I think at some point the Democrats are going to realize that they're going to have to support the president's policies because of what's happening in cities like Phoenix and cities across the country. Just remember, now it's affecting the communities that they represent. It's not affecting the Republican strongholds or the red states in particular. These
right.
citizens or these people are being dropped off in the blue state areas, and they're going to wake up because of the politics.
Tom, do you think that this is an election issue in 2020 if the Democrats in Congress and the presidential candidates don't recognize that this is a severe problem on a number of different levels?
Well, it's obviously going to be an issue in the 2020 thing. It drives me nuts. I have to say this. On the screen, it says Steve Rogers. And right before I came here, I turned on the TV just to see what was on, and Captain America was on. So this it's driving me nuts, okay?
Hey, Tom, believe it or not, Tom, they actually introduced me on the air as Captain America.
and that's one of the better Marvel movies. I don't know if you ever saw it, Bruce, the original Captain America with Tommy Lee Jones back in World War II. I really like that movie. The other thing is, I can't even remember what the question was. No, one other thing. I read a thing one time about these two people that had done a Broadway play for like 500 performances, and then they would have a bet amongst themselves to see who could sneak the word banana into their dialogue during the night, and whoever won would get the other person had to buy dinner. How many times can you sneak Democrat socialist into one sentence? It's driving me nuts. The other thing is, something has to be done. But what do you want done? I honestly don't know. What do you want done, Bruce? Do you want a wall, a 60-foot high wall, a 100-foot high wall?
Well, let's talk.
To be let into the country?
Let's let Stephen answer that question.
Here's what we want done. We want the United States Congress to do their job. We want the United States Congress to work with the president on immigration reform. He has been very, very consistent on that. Now, why the wall? I'll tell you what, Tom. The reason why the wall needs to go up is when you talk to the border patrols down there, that it's unmanageable anymore. You put a barrier up on one section, and that works. It keeps them away from there. In fact, remember Jim Acosta, that complete fool he made of himself when he went down to an area where there was a wall? He said, look, there's no problem here. What's the problem? Hey, Jim, there's a wall behind you. The problem is where there's no wall. So that's why you want the wall up. It's a way to manage the flow where into the points of entry where you should be coming here legally. So there's your answer. But Congress, they have to work on...
Well, and Congress authorized this wall, I think it was in 2007 or 2006. They actually talked about allocating the money. They never actually appropriated it. This is something that, even during Obama's time, people were actually willing to be talking about this. It just seems like this is a resist at any cost to our country. And it is a security issue, and it's a blemish, I think, on our country.
Well, it certainly is. They supported it. You're right. They voted to fund it, but something happened. You know what happened? Donald Trump became president of the United States.
Yep.
And it's just backfiring badly on them. They know it. And as far as how many times could I put Democrat socialists in the same sentence in a short period of time? Every time, because that is the truth. It's a Democrat socialist party.
I told you, Tom, this guy doesn't back down. I like his style.
And I hear the Jersey in his voice, too. Yeah. Anyway, Steve.
Born in Brooklyn, though. Born in Brooklyn.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Brooklyn guy.
Here I'm going to be the dumb Arizonan. Is there a difference between Brooklyn and Jersey? I'm just kidding. I know that would start a fight anywhere.
All right. Okay, let me.
No, what? My question is this. Does the Trump administration have a number of people that they would allow into the country each year?
Well, I tell you what, Tom, that's a real good question. I believe there is some sort of number regarding illegal immigrants from all countries, okay? And I think it's only to manage the flow. So I wouldn't say like there's a quota, 100,000, we're going to stop. But I think it's just set up, and it was set up way before the president took office.
No, I know the number. I know what the number is. We either invite or create about 1 million new citizens to this country every year. And we've been doing that for years and years and years. And we are really the most welcoming country in the entire universe for all that counts. And so it's not a matter of, there are no Republicans who are against immigration. It's illegal immigration, Tom, and that's the problem. That's what we're trying to fight here.
Hey, Bruce, let me give you an example. My wife was raised in the Soviet Union. All right, so she knows. Believe me, she knows what socialism could do, and it's very destructive. But she came here legally, and it took her 10 years to become an American citizen. But she worked hard, she obeyed the law, and she did what had to be done. And I'll tell you, one of the proudest days of my life was when she took the oath of citizenship here in America. And she stands back and she says, why did I have to go through all of that? And these people could just walk in, and now we have to pay their way. So it's up front and personal for me because I see what she went through, but she did it the right way. And that's all we're asking. That's all the president is asking. You're welcome. Our arms are open, but do it legally.
Hey, Tom and Steve, no one would deny that there is a humanitarian crisis in places like Guatemala, Honduras, Nicaragua, but are jobs, hunger, and wanting to be closer to family members a legal and allowable rationale for immigrants to receive asylum? I mean, this is what's going on. The majority of those people who actually do show up for their hearings, and there are very few that do that, most of those people are denied because the law is very, very clear. Yet you hear the Democrats on TV, on the radio, in writing, all of them talking about, well, we've got these awful problems in Central America. Those are our problems, but it is not a legal rationale to allow immigrants into this country.
One thing really quickly, Steve, you tried to sneak this one past us, but we're not dumb. Your wife was raised in the Soviet Union, but people who conflate socialism and communism, that's a lazy argument because they're not the same thing.
No, socialism, you become communism. Talk to her. Talk to people where that country became a socialist country and segued right into communism. So the fact of the matter is that the state begins to control everything. Take their God, take their Bibles, take their spiritual worship, take their guns.
Take our Social Security.
And take their Social Security and let them depend on the government. And you know what? That becomes a communist dictatorship.
That's why there are so many communist dictatorships in the world today, right? Used to be Cuba, sort of
Vietnam. Still Cuba. And don't tell me the Castro brothers and their influence aren't still on that island. You're crazy, Tom, if you think that. All right, hey.
Okay, guys.
Steve, thanks.
This has been fun.
This has been a great interview. I hope you'll agree to come back on the show again soon. I love the Brooklyn. My dad grew up in Williamsburg in Brooklyn, and it's a great place to grow up in. Steven Rogers, Trump 2020 reelect, senior advisor to the president. Thanks very much for appearing on the show. When we come back, we'll have George Bardmesser from The Federalist. Thanks very much for listening to Inside Track. Welcome back to the Twilight Zone here on Inside Track. We just had a flashback from the 2018 midterm elections. And
Wow.
Welcome back to Inside Track, sponsored by Corazon Cabinets, your locally owned source for high-quality kitchen and bath cabinets, all at wholesale prices. Call Corazon Cabinets and schedule a visit to the showroom. I just spoke to a very satisfied Corazon customer who loves her Corazon kitchen. Jackie says she's never been more pleased with the product and the low price that she paid. Call 488-2266. You will be amazed by the great styles and super, super low prices and quality at Corazon Cabinets. Now for his return to Inside Track, Federalist contributor and American greatness opinion columnist George Bardmesser. You wrote this week, I think, George, a column for American Greatness about Hillary Clinton. I need to read this to the listeners. You are the only one who can save the Democratic Party from itself. Only you have the ruthlessness, the unbending determination, and the intestinal fortitude to claim what is rightfully yours. The current crop of contenders is nothing but political lightweights and cheesy wannabes. The election is less than 19 months away, and the wheels are already coming off this Democratic jalopy. Wow, George, is Hillary the answer for the Democrat Party?
Well, it would certainly be an interesting answer. I mean, let's face it, the current you know, a clown car. They wouldn't fit into one clown car, probably take a couple clown vans. But they are not exactly impressive, let's put it that way. I mean, Biden, he is the only one who can claim some impressiveness there. I mean, he is surprisingly calm. You know, the Dems usually are calm. I mean, it's just not impressive. I mean, these people are ludicrous. They're ridiculous. I mean, you've got a small-town mayor, you know, running for president now. Seriously. I mean, this is it's silly. So my proposal for Hillary, and I hope she takes it seriously, is that she should step in. You know, she's been sending some smoke signals lately that she's thinking about it again. I think she should step in. I think she should run. I mean, she came sort of close twice, so she has lots of experience. You know, Hillary, she's America's sweetheart, really. I mean, every time, every day she wakes up, she goes to the bathroom, she puts on her layers of makeup, and staring back at her from the mirror is America's sweetheart.
And the next president of the United States.
Exactly. I mean, Biden sees the next president of the United States, too, in the mirror, but he's obviously deluded. But Hillary, you know, I think Hillary is it. I really think that Hillary is the answer.
George, we have joining us here this afternoon on the show, co-host Tom Danahy, who here in Tucson is just known as Danahy. If you say Danahy, they know who he is. He is a columnist with the Tucson Weekly. What do you think of Hillary Clinton, Tom?
First of all, I had to address something that George said. So you're telling me that a small-town mayor running for president is more ludicrous than a guy who's best known for declaring bankruptcy and cheating at golf? Okay, that's we can all run for president. We can all run for president.
Cheating at golf teaches you valuable life skills.
No. Cheating at golf is something you don't do. It says, like, somebody once said that golf is like a Speedo. It reveals a lot about a man. People don't cheat at golf. They don't, or they're not supposed to. I mean, in baseball, it's kind of winked at, and in football, they chuckle at it. In golf, it's like a sacrilege, and he cheats all the time.
How do you know that?
Oh, my goodness.
How do you know that?
I'll give you a book.
Have you been there?
I'll give you a book.
Really?
It's
really?
Called Commander and Cheat, and it's by Rick Riley, a Sports Illustrated guy, and he interviewed over 1,000 people.
Played
golf with Donald Trump.
Tom, it's Tom, right?
It is Tom.
Tom, I hate to point this out to you, okay, but nobody in the real world cares about this.
That's true.
I mean,
I agree.
Okay.
I agree. Now, getting back to Hillary Clinton, which was a question.
Finally,
I held my nose and I voted for her. She was worse than Michael Dukakis. She was the least impressive Democratic nominee of my lifetime. Okay, but fortunately, she had just a really, really crappy guy to run against, and so I was able to vote for her. But I'm not a fan of Hillary Clinton. I don't think she's a crook that has to go to prison, like Donald Trump says. I'm smart enough to have read the entire report about the uranium transfer, and I know that the entire United States government was in favor of it. It's not like she was trying to sneak
the
uranium
entire
out of
the United States.
You know it was, Bruce, and don't even go down that road.
I think, Tom, you're rewriting history. There.
I'm rewriting. Okay, we're going to go along. I'm not stupid, okay? I don't think Hillary Clinton got, hey, here's 20% of our uranium. Let's give it to the Russians. That's not
what
happened.
That was a smart move, right, Danahy?
No, she got paid for it. She got paid for it, and
you know she did,
Tom. We gave it to the Russians.
You know she did.
Yes, she did. I mean, not in the sense that somebody.
She was Secretary of State. How'd she get?
You know, she got paid. Her husband was paid $500,000 to the foundation. Tom, a little inappropriate. Just a disclosure error, oversight. Let me go back to Joe Biden. George, about a month ago in the Federalist, you wrote about the Democrat front runner now, Joe Biden, and you wrote Biden. The creepy old guy who likes to massage women and 13-year-old girls in public, that guy? I have a 19-year-old daughter. I don't want my daughter anywhere close to him.
Right, and that is exactly why I think Hillary should be the front runner, because Hillary has never, ever, to the best of our knowledge, fondled any 13-year-old of any gender. In fact, of any gender, you know.
Well, I don't know about that, at least in public.
Okay, George, I have a question for you. And we're adults here, so maybe we can be honest with each other. Okay. Of all the people who have declared to be running for president in 2020, who's the only one who has publicly bragged about sexually assaulting women? Dead silence.
None of them.
Really? You didn't hear that? We've all heard it. And so, wait, now you're going to say he didn't say what he really did say, and even if he did, it's okay.
Nobody cares.
No, your question was who, Tom, let's be careful here. Your question was who bragged about sexual assault?
Uh-huh.
The answer is no one.
Oh, so grabbing women by their private parts is not sexual assault.
Did he say that he did it?
Yes, he did.
He did it. No, yeah, he did not. Well, I read that.
Let's bet all the money we own that he said that. Bruce, did he say that?
No.
He did? Bruce!
No, he did not say that. He didn't say, I did this. Okay? He never said that.
He said, when you're rich, you can grab them by their private parts.
Right. Exactly.
He didn't say he did it.
Did he one time?
Shame on both of you. Shame on both of you.
All right. It was so much for the shame and blame. Hey, George, I agree with your thesis that most of these so-called Democrat candidates would not be electable in Albania, much less in America. This crowd is a pathetic joke. Just looking at these people requires something far stronger than Chardonnay. Only you can bring sanity, Hillary. This is what you wrote. Only you can do what you already did before, well, almost twice. When is the right time for Mrs. Clinton to jump in?
I would say, well, before the debate start, obviously. So I'm really hoping that sometime in perhaps May, you know, she's going to come riding out on that white horse and will finally declare and make so many look, there are millions of girls out there, young girls, who were, you know, desperately hoping for her to get elected. There were millions of old girls, very old girls, who were desperately hoping for her. Well, maybe not so many old girls, but some old girls were hoping. So now is the time. I mean, this is her moment. I mean, I really think that in 2016, it was the perfect storm. She was an awful candidate. She had a crappy team. Can I say that on the radio?
Yeah, you can. They were crappy.
I agree.
She had a bad team, you know, working for her. But this time she can do it. So this is her moment. I mean, I honestly, in May, I am, you know, desperately hoping that Hillary will do the right thing, will finally announce, you know, she will be there to correct the mistakes, in quotes, of 2016. She will explain why, finally, you know, we should vote for her instead of, well, the other guy. This is it. This is her moment. You know, the dreams and the hopes and the aspirations of millions of old girls and young girls are with her.
George, my favorite quote from your piece was on Senator Warren. I quote here, Liz Warren, what a joke. If she were any whiter, she'd be Casper the Friendly Joke. The DNA test in Broglio was an embarrassment to every woman who ever wanted to run for president on a Native American platform. Besides, show me a single person who has ever wanted to shave Warren's insectoid legs, and I'll show you a fetishist and a closet pervert. Now, I don't know what an insectoid leg is, but are her legs that skinny?
Well,
where'd you come up with that?
If you ever like look at her, like, for example, Warren.
Well, now I will, for crying out loud.
Well, you know, if you look like in pictures, you know, like, you know, in images, you don't actually, you know, quite capture it. But if you ever see a video of her like walking or moving, she has a sort of insectoid way of, you know, bearing. I mean, she doesn't look quite human. There's something unnatural about her.
George, you're evil. You got him thinking about her legs, and I can't get the vision of Hillary Clinton on a white horse out of my head now.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty scary. I mean, it's a bizarre. I mean, we have now 20. Is it 20 or 21 now? I mean, 20. Are we in the triple digits now?
No, Evan, actually, it might be 21. It's going to triple digits before we're done.
Yeah,
And not a single one of them is serious. I mean,
no.
it's ridiculous. I mean, we've got the mayor of a small town. I mean, you cannot tell me seriously that this guy is going to be president.
Hey, we'll talk when we come back from a break in just a second. We'll talk about the former city councilman from El Paso, Texas, Robert Francis Beto or Beto O'Rourke. You're listening to Inside Track. We're here with Jared Bardmeister. It is Bruce Ash and Tom Danahy. Stay tuned. We're back with Jared Bardmeister. Let's talk about Robert Francis O'Rourke. You said this man is...
I can barely hear you, but I can hear... Okay, music is gone. Sorry.
Yeah. You said about Robert Francis O'Rourke, the man is a threadbare lining of an empty suit. The El Paso City Council should have been his lifetime career ceiling. The guy admitted... to trying to feed feces to his wife, for Pete's sake. Can you imagine him in a debate with Trump? Can you?
I honestly can't. I mean, he looks better. I think his only accomplishment is losing a race in Texas, the Senate race, after spending $80 million, I mean, which is, to my knowledge, the biggest amount ever spent on a Senate race. So that's his sole accomplishment. Losing a race. I mean, why that makes him qualified to be president or even run for president is a mystery. But it looks like, I wrote that, a couple of weeks ago. It looks like the shine is coming off of him. I mean, his numbers are falling. I think a lot of reporters are discovering that there's really no there, that, you know, whatever is between his ears, you know, it's not much of a brain. There's no, like, nothing. No ideas, no nothing. I mean, his shtick is not to take any policy positions, but to go around and ask the voters what they think. Now, there's nothing wrong with asking the voters what they think, don't get me wrong, but if that's your entire sort of, race, you got to have a vision of some kind, maybe not a policy position on every single policy, and nobody reads these white papers or policy papers, but at least you have to know where you're going and why you're doing it. I mean, his only reason seems to be, I have nothing better to do, so I'm going to run for president.
Tom, what do you think of Beto?
I wish there was, I don't think there's no there, but I wish there were more there. I really do. He's got a way with people, and he does have a style, but I wish there were more substance. Maybe he's holding back on the substance for later, but, I'm 66 years old. I wish there were more attractive younger candidates. I mean, I was talking the other day to some kids who are going, Tom, who do you think could beat Donald Trump the worst? And the answer obviously is Barack Obama, but he can't run. Barack Obama would kill Donald Trump because he's class and dignity against white trash, okay? Donald Trump couldn't beat Bill Clinton.
You know, George, the interesting thing about this conversation with Tom, and I love him. We're dear friends. We've been friends for a long, long time. And he's a smart guy. But it's amazing. All we've been hearing from Tom about Donald Trump is his coarseness and the way that he is as a person outside of the office.
That matters to me.
Oh, good. I'm glad it matters to you. I had a lot of presidents who I admired their personal lifestyles and the way that they conducted themselves. They lied. They didn't fulfill their promises. And the problems that we have today, Tom, are largely because of the stuff that they didn't do, the stuff that they said they do, but they didn't do. So on that basis, so now let's go back, George, if we can, to the baggage that both Hillary Clinton and Joe Biden have. Who has more baggage? You've described it as, a cargo hold of a transatlantic 747.
Clinton certainly has more criminality in her baggage, let's put it that way. Just the listing of all the scandals, and there's no one person who can possibly hold in their head all the details of all the Clinton scandals. I mean, there's so many. I mean, you have to start like a Wikipedia just like for the Clinton scandals. And there's plenty of criminality there. I mean, from this last election to before, on and on and on. Now, Biden's baggage is different. Biden's baggage is sort of the baggage of a non-entity. Yeah, I mean, he's got some shady deals there with Ukraine and this and that. I mean, but really, he's sort of a typical Democrat who voted the way typical Democrats voted for, you know, or said or whatever about things like busing back, you know, 50 years ago, about things like, you know, women's issues. So he's not atypical, but he really doesn't fit the current sort of political dynamic in the Democratic Party.
George and Tom, a very close friend of mine, is a neighbor, not directly next door, but she lives in the same neighborhood as Joe Biden. The reputation he has amongst his neighbors and the servicemen who come to his house is that he is cheap and he doesn't pay his bills.
That sounds familiar.
And he is not a nice guy. You know, he comes across as average Joe, good old Joe, but this guy has had more faux pas, more you know, goof-ups, and I mean, you can't really look to anything the guy has ever seriously accomplished in the Senate or as vice president.
Well, he's your typical politician. I mean, who knows, I mean, what he's like in personal life. It doesn't surprise me at all that he's sort of an asshole, if I can say that on the radio.
You just said it, and you can.
I can?
Yes, okay, you great. Can. Not over and over again, but
now you tell me.
Yeah, I mean, this working class Joe schtick, I don't know, it's worked in Delaware, but Delaware is a very blue state, so he doesn't have to try very hard to do his schtick in Delaware to get elected. I mean, whether that sells, you know, across the nation, I'm a little skeptical. I mean, he's a multimillionaire. He's done his, you know, speeches at $50,000, $100,000 a pop, just like Hillary, only Hillary was charging more. You know, I don't think he's a good candidate. I mean, I really do not think that he is. I mean, he's a back-slapping pole who worked in Delaware. That act worked in Delaware.
The thing with the national,
it flopped.
This thing with Anita Hill, his sort of halfway apology to her earlier this week, did not go over very well.
It didn't. I mean, I don't know that he needs to apologize for anything, to be honest. I remember those hearings. I actually watched a lot of those hearings. You know, in the left's retelling of the story, there's something wrong with him.
Right.
But she had a chance to tell her story. She was questioned, obviously, you know, as she should have been. Thomas told his story. The public was, you know, I think 2-1 more on his side than her side, so she couldn't have been very persuasive after all that. So I don't think he needs to apologize for anything, now, in the sort of logical universe, of course. Now, as far as the current, you know, Democratic Party, you know, activists and all that, you know, his groveling apology tour, maybe it'll work, maybe it won't. I mean, I tend to think that no matter how much, the more he apologizes, the more the guiltier he looks.
George, are any of these women, from Anita Hill up through the stuff that's going on right now, are any of these women telling the truth?
About what?
About being sexually assaulted or sexually harassed? From Anita Hill on up to Dr. Blasey Ford to Senator Martha McSally. Are they all lying?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, Ford is a liar. I think it's been demonstrated for many facts that she's a liar. Was Anita Hill's story true? She had it. I mean, I wasn't there. Nobody was there. She had a chance to tell her story. The public and the Senate did not believe it. Martha McSally, is that the one you mentioned?
Yes.
Is she telling the truth? I don't know. I mean, I assume she is, but I mean, she's not. She's not obviously trying to benefit from it, so probably she is. Unlike, say, Ford, for example, who somehow managed to earn $1 million on this whole deal. In my view, should you believe the woman automatically because she's a woman? No, I don't think so. I mean, people lie. You know, everybody lies. I mean, men lie, women lie, children lie, old people lie. I mean, there's absolutely no reason to think that somebody's, you know, genital configuration makes you honest, inherently. So that's my view. I mean, if you make an accusation, you know, you have a chance to present your accusation, but you should have to prove it, just like anything else. I mean, if you accuse somebody of you know, murder, you should prove it. I mean, not just accuse them of something, right? Same thing here.
George, what's your next column? What you working on now?
Well, I submitted one. We'll see if they take it. It's about the current investigations and, you know, the Democrats' obsession with investigations and what I think President Trump should do in response to those investigations. So we'll see if it gets published. I mean, I'm not a regular, you know, columnist for, you know, for these magazines. So, you know, I'm not Victor Davis Hanson, for example. So we'll see.
Well, George Bardmesser, and that's Bardmesser. He's a regular contributor at The Federalist. You look for him online. He's wicked smart, and he's pretty damn humorous. George, thanks very much for being with us on the show today. Look forward to having you back real soon.
My pleasure. Thank you.
All right. Thanks. Tom, you were going to throw something at me here. You got about half a minute. What are you going to throw at me?
Oh, really? This would, we could have talked an entire hour about this, but true or false, over the last 60 years, the economy has always been better under Democrats than it has under Republicans. True or false?
I don't know.
The answer is true.
Okay.
By a substantial margin, and yet Democrats do not ever talk about that. It drives me nuts. Okay? They should be shouting from the rooftops.
All right, well, that's it for us today. Please support our great sponsors, Imus Wilkinson Asset Management, Tucson Iron and Metal Surplus, and Corazon Cabinets. Each of these companies are well-run local family businesses. Until next week, when we spotlight the testimony of World War II Holocaust survivor William Kugelman. For Inside Track, this is Bruce Ash and Tom Danahy. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.